Good morning and welcome to Step Into the Light. We're your hosts. I'm Patty Sheen.
And I'm Jean Alfieri. Thank you for listening.
Together, we will introduce you to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light.
And those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light.
Welcome to Tuesday Treasure, where we air a show from our archives. This episode of Step Into the Light features author and speaker Eric Sprinkle and originally aired in June of 2017. Let's take a look back.
Speaker and adventurer Eric Sprinkle joins me this morning. Eric has traveled the world and spanned the adventure spectrum from summiting active volcanoes in New Zealand to kayaking among the glaciers of Alaska. When at home, Eric works for the United States Air Force as a swiftwater rescue instructor and whitewater guide instructor. Eric believes that adventure can put us in touch with our Creator, revitalize our purpose at work, and enhance our relationships. Welcome to the show this morning, Eric.
Thank you so much for having me, Patty. I appreciate this time.
Well, I'm very excited to have you, Eric. I enjoyed visiting with you over there in Estes Park when we met at the Writers Conference, and I knew that you would just be an awesome guest for the show. I think you're going to have some really exciting things to tell us about how we can challenge ourselves, and hopefully you'll share with us some of the challenges that you have experienced. Eric, I usually begin my interviews by asking my guests a little bit about their childhood. I know from talking to you and looking at your website that you are an adventurer extraordinaire. Was this in your nature when you were a young child? Were you the type that was, you know, walking the top of the fence line at 3 years old and popping wheelies on your bike and driving your family crazy because they were scared to death you were going to get hurt, or was that not a part of your growing up?
Right, absolutely. I mean, it's, you know, we all have some adventure in us, you know, especially boys. But I was the one doing the, you know, taking it just a little bit further, or, you know, going out exploring. I grew up in Southeast Michigan, where it essentially looks a lot like Ohio. Nothing against Ohio, but it is just a big field. So there's a lot to be said for, imagination and, you know, getting out and trying to make things a little more exciting when you grow up there. So naturally, when I come to Colorado, which is adventure playground, oh yeah, I'm just so in my element here. Absolutely.
Well, I shared a little bit with you about how I came to Colorado. I came out here to take a trip on horseback in the San Juan Mountains for 11 days, and that was my most thrilling experience of my whole life, and I wish I had kept up that lifestyle. Unfortunately, I did not, but yeah,
right.
I agree with you. Colorado
is
the place.
Out here.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Yeah. It is so easy to do that out here. I mean, it is just, you know, Colorado Springs, you know, where I live. It's just one of the multi-sport capitals of the world. You know, you just got hiking, biking, rafting, mountains, skiing. You know, it's just all going on, and it's all right there. Not 6 hours, not 10 hours away. Like, literally, some of it literally is 20 minutes across town. So, yeah, how do you not do it?
Mm-hmm. Well, you shared on your website and in your bio that you work for the Air Force. Will you clarify that? Are you in the Air Force, or are you a civilian working with the Air Force at this point?
Right. Department of Defense civilian working with the Air Force. Specifically, I was attached to the U.S. Air Force Academy. They have an outdoor recreation program like every Air Force base around the world. So part of the recreation program here in Colorado is they had a whitewater rafting program, and they needed someone to train whitewater rafting guides, and I taught a swiftwater rescue class for them. The government essentially paid me to go whitewater rafting, and I know somebody has to do it, right?
Yeah, and I wanted to clarify for listeners, too, you call your, on your website, you talk about being the founder of Adventure Experience. Adventure
Yes.
Experience is not so much an outfitting guide entity as it's, I want to call it, as writers, Eric, I'm going to call it your brand. Is that
there
pretty
we go.
Much right?
That's exactly right.
that that's the way you live your life. And you have written a book. It's not out yet, but I can't wait for it to be out because I'm sure it will be quite an exciting read.
It's fun, Patty. You know, literally the biggest struggle I have with my brand, Adventure Experience, is literally I have to kind of remind people it's not an outfitter. It's a way of life, right? That's my speaking brand. So, yeah, it's kind of fun. If that's the biggest hiccup I have with that, it's totally great.
And see, here when I first read your website, I thought I was going to get a group of my 60-plus friends together, and you were going to take us on this great mountain hiking
Right, exactly.
Although I wouldn't put it past you to be able to do that very thing.
Absolutely, we could totally do it, but maybe I'll just talk to your friends about the benefit of doing it, and then we'll go do it. Yeah, either way.
That's right, and that's exactly what we want to do today, Eric. You talk about being on kind of a journey that got you started on all of this, what I would call kind of extreme adventure. Would you share with us what was the turning point for you that really kind of pushed you over the edge to these extremely challenging adventures?
Well, yeah, you kind of got adventure all your life. It's in your heart, you know, so you're going out and pursuing that. Came out to Colorado with U.S. Air Force back in the 90s. That was amazing. So now I'm place where you can really pursue it. Just in the evenings after work, you can go, you know, adventuring and running around. We'll hike under a waterfall in a little mountain canyon just on the other side of town. So that really definitely kind of fanned the flames. Then I was working corporate IT here in Colorado Springs after I got out of the Air Force. Did that for a number of years, but I started. There was a sign at Peterson Air Force Base with their outdoor rec program asking for volunteers to learn to be whitewater rafting guides for their program. And I was in the Air Force during the early 90s, so this was Desert Storm. We were working 12-hour shifts constantly for 2 years, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So when I got out, it was one of those, man, I think I'm just going to take the summer off. I think I'm just going to take some downtime and just enjoy Colorado and just do some of these things I've been putting off while I was here, you know, working so hard. And so I took the summer off and basically learned to be a whitewater rafting guide. Boom, that was it. So basically since then, while I was working corporate IT, I was doing rafting on the weekends. It was awesome. When I left corporate IT, I kind of jumped in full time doing it. I hooked up with the Whitewater program over at Peterson Air Force Base, and then I later jumped over to the Air Force Academy's program, both here in town. That's pretty handy. And started doing that more full time, got my Swiftwater Rescue certification so I could talk about not just how to guide, but how to do it safely and, you know, run rescue scenarios with people. And generally my life went from sitting in an office, looking out the window, wishing I was out there, to, you know, standing waist deep in 50-degree water in the month of May. So whatever that looks like, that's what I was doing.
Goodness. So you've probably done some rafting up there in the Upper Arkansas River area.
Absolutely. I like to believe at this point I've just about done the Arkansas from the headwaters all the way down to through every rapid you have down to Pueblo Reservoir. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was up there in Salida the other day, and I saw some rafters, and I thought, oh, that looks like such fun, but I've never done it.
Oh, Patty, you live in Colorado, girl. It's world-class rafting, and it's right there.
I know.
And it is fun, right?
Yeah, I suppose it's something I should try one of these days.
You'll be one day older when you do.
That's true. Do you ski, Eric?
I do. Skiing's a little bit of a rich man's sport these days, but I can get up there, yeah, I definitely do.
I just thought I'd ask. I could see you as a pretty good skier.
Yeah.
Eric, I know you had an experience that was very difficult for you, and my understanding is that this led to your traveling around the world. Would you share as much as you are comfortable sharing about that with our listeners this morning?
Yeah, the precipitating event, if you will. We're writers, right? So when you're writing a story,
yes.
you've got the character, you've got the setting, And then you have to put, you know, some inciting event, some precipitating event in there that really puts them on the journey. My precipitating event would be December 23rd, 2011. I will remember that Christmas for the rest of my life. I tell you what, it was 17 years me and my wife were married, and yep, we were coming up on that Christmas, and you know, life was a little crazy. Life was, all kinds of stuff going on, but it's Christmas time, right? And I was just doing the last minute Christmassy stuff, and I went out that day because it's December 23rd. So of course, you know, us guys, we're like finishing up our shopping that day. We of course don't, we're not doing anything, you know, before we, run out of time. So yeah, ran out, did some last minute gift shopping, came back, and boy, I tell you what, walked in the door, house smells like cinnamon candles. It's just, it's just that wonderful Christmassy time of year. And yeah, the house was a little quieter than normal. Usually, you know, my wife and I are meeting each other at the door. I figured, maybe she's, you know, buried hip deep in wrapping paper, you know, doing last minute presents or something. And, you know, maybe she's taking a nap. Ooh, I should be quiet. No, she's not taking a nap. Yeah, suffice to say, between 4:08, 4:12 p.m. that day, I called 911 operator to report that I had found my wife, and she had passed away, actually, while I was out running around. And, thus began what I would call the worst Christmas of my life. It was just a fog, you know, obviously, for the next couple of days and weeks, probably a little foggy for a few months. But that is obviously what kicked it off, because, you know, here's your life with this beautiful woman. Hopefully you got a photo of her on the slideshow going by on the website right now. Here's this beautiful girl. Here's this wonderful marriage.
She was a lovely lady.
You know, and here we are, and we've just got it down. You know, we've got the marriage thing down. We've got, you know, our lives together down. The habits, the routines are just there, and it's just that comfortable when you know the person, they know you, and you're just living life together, and it's just fun, right? It's just fun, and we're having the time of our lives, and, you know, and then all of a sudden, it's over. It's, you know, that has come to an end, and you are now alone, and the house is really quiet, and what do you do next, kind of a thing.
Wow. That's got to have been devastating, Eric, and especially with you both being so young.
Right. Because now, you know, I'm not a big fan of the term widower. You know, I mean, we all associate that with, like, you know, 60, 70 year old men, but no, here you are 40 something. And yeah, your wife has died and there you are. What do you do? And, you know, the answer for anyone who's lost someone is, well, you kind of put your head down and just kind of go through, you know, you got the obvious first couple of days where you're just fogging through. You're just kind of unaware of anything, you know, just kind of trying to get through all the craziness. And then, you know, from there you kind of get that, you know, you kind of go back and forth between that foggy sense of what am I doing to that overwhelmed, you know, tornado of, oh my gosh, I've got so many things I need to do. I need to get with these people. I need to get with the insurance company. I need to call Social Security. And just that overwhelmingness, you know, that you kind of go back and forth between. And then, of course, a couple months down the line, you start to feel a little more like you kind of got it, but kind of got your feet under you again, and you're kind of moving forward and feel a little more capable. And that's when I like to pleasantly call that Stupidville, because this is where, or you knew, don't even try planning things, because you're going to drop the ball. But then you start to feel a little more capable, a little more confident. So you're like, you know what, I'm going to start doing some of that stuff again. And then you're like, are you kidding me? I, right? I mean, just ridiculous errors and you know, just things that you just, you forget to write down. You write them down on the wrong day. You just, oh my gosh. Yeah. So it's, that joyful time of just, yeah, thinking you're kind of coming back and no, you're actually still a little premature, but that led to summertime, which is my, that was my work time at the time. And it was just like, okay, this is great. 'Cause now I can just get heads down and just work. No questions, no nothing. Just go exhaust yourself, come home and sleep. Do it again the next day. And honestly, that was awesome. thinking, no figuring stuff out, just working. Yeah, that was definitely a nice break there.
Well, I understand where you're coming from with that, Eric.
Yeah.
You do. You live in kind of a state of, I don't know, what would you call it, Eric? Existence, I guess, rather than just really living. Your senses are dulled.
Right.
I had a guest on the show here a couple of weeks ago who said that actually that is a mental mechanism where a certain percentage of your emotional makeup actually shuts down to enable you to cope with the reality of what's going on.
Right. Because, and this was fascinating to me, and I'm going to have to check your past shows because, yes, I definitely got into some of the mental working, some of the brain science into what's going on and how can I help it? Because for me, okay, I'm a guy. So when it comes to grieving, I'm going to be a whole lot less waterworks, a whole lot less, you know, outward emotions.
Right.
You know, I feel awful, but I'm going to deal with it in a slightly different way. But to me, what was fascinating was, and I know you've seen this, the anniversaries. And I'm not talking the 1 year anniversaries. I mean, I could tell you when the 23rd day of the month was coming for the first, I mean, it was through April, probably May. So, like, you know, 4 or 5 months after Christine died, I could tell you when the 23rd day of the month was coming and I didn't have to look at the calendar. I mean, it was one of those things where you're like, did I mistakenly get decaf coffee? Like, my energy would go down. I would have this subtle little panicky feeling coming up. And, you know, part of me is like, what is this? I do not get this. How does my body even know what day it is? Much less, why would it respond this way? I feel like I'm walking into a gunfight here. My senses are all keyed up and there's nothing happening. And then you'd look at the calendar and you'd be like, oh, well, that's exactly it. Tomorrow's the 23rd. And I had this for a couple of months. So I started looking at the brain science. You know, I found a wonderful, wonderful book. It's a great resource, Surviving Survival by Lawrence Gonzalez. This book, he wrote a book that I really liked called Deep Survival. And it was about in the wilderness, who lives, who dies, and why. You know, when crazy things happen, what's some of the brain science about how your brain is figuring out how to respond to, you know, cataclysmic accidents in the wilderness. Okay, great book. But then he writes this next one, and Surviving Survival was about, here's a woman who was in a shark attack. Here's a woman who lost her son. You know, here's a person who their husband died in a car accident. Okay, you got through that event, and here, you know, and we know why you got through that event and everything. But now here you are 2 weeks later, and what do you do now? How do you go on after you get out of the hospital and you're going to be okay? And now you start your life over. How do you do that? He just had some wonderful, wonderful, wonderful ideas on that. Some of them you could just bottom line as he metaphorically said, you know, if you want to move past something, the easiest way to aid your brain in that grieving process is to hit something. And he said, it's, you know, it's whatever you want. You can hit the gym and just go physically, just throw your body into something that's just so physically demanding. You just exhaust yourself. He said that actually is a reasonable way to do the process. Another one he said is go hit the books, go learn a new language, go learn how to play the piano, go take your mind somewhere where it just is absolutely wrapped around something totally different, totally unique.
Treated with,
and something that, something that his big thing was, something that very slowly but incrementally will lead towards a larger goal. Because he said, in terms of what you're talking about, those mental models that your brain has built up that it's using, well, those mental models are all wrong now. Here's our little brain, and there are these wonderful little prediction engines, you know, trying to tell us what's most likely to happen next, and is it going to be life-threatening, or is it going to be pleasant, or whatever. And, you know, our brains are pretty good at this, I got to admit. But they do it because they're based on these little models of our lives. And I know that my model of my house tells me my house is a safe place. Nothing's going to jump out and, you know, endanger me. So I'm very relaxed at home. Well, it's interesting. When you go to somebody else's home, so often, Patty, the first thing they'll do when they invite you into their new home is, would you like a tour? Would you like, you know, can we show you around? Well, what are we doing when we do that? Well, we're basically inviting that person coming into our house to kind of establish a mental model of our house. Why? Because guests feel more comfortable when they are comfortable in their surroundings. So I take them around the house. Now they feel more comfortable and at ease. That's just how our brains work. The problem, of course, is when that mental model is no longer accurate, now you're sitting there in the middle of the day and your brain is telling you sometime around 4 o'clock, you got to start wrapping up whatever you're doing, because at some point, Christine's going to come in the door and you're going to jump up and go meet her there. But guess what? That's never going to happen again. Your brain is now working against you because it's telling you to prepare for this predictive event that is absolutely over and done with and not going to be there. So how do you move on? You hit the gym, you hit the books, or in my case, little did I know, the fix action, if you will, that I ended up taking was totally outside of myself. It was totally God putting it there for me. And it was something that Lawrence Gonzalez highly recommends. In fact, he said it's a cultural norm around the world for all cultures, all variations around the world. You'll see this when something traumatic happens. He said, you know, hit the road, basically travel. You know what's funny, Patty, is you totally see this everywhere, right? You see it in Australia, you know, talking about going on walkabout, trying to figure things out. You've got it, Native Americans would go on a vision quest. You've got these wonderful examples in cultures all over the world where when something happens and shakes up your world, you step out of that world into a foreign experience that you are not comfortable with, and you go stay there for a while. Mm-hmm. In my case, travel around the world.
Wow. Eric, this is a good place to take a short break. Welcome, listeners. You are listening to Step Into the Light. I am your host, Patty Sheen. My guest this morning is Eric Sprinkle. Eric is a published author. He is also a speaker, and he is what I call an adventurer extraordinaire. And he has been up to this point sharing with us what led up to the point where he started exploring the world in a new way. We're going to talk about some of his adventures and what that has done for him, what adventuring can do for us as far as getting back in touch with our creator, maybe even improving our job performance and enhancing our relationships with people in general. Eric can be found online at adventureexperience.net, and you probably won't remember that, so I'm going to refer you to my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com. There, under the Blog Talk Radio tab, you will find a website and social media page. And on that page, you will find links to all of the guests that I have had on the show. So I would recommend that you go and check out Eric's page. He also has a YouTube channel, and we'll be getting that up there as well. The show is on archive, so if you missed a part of it, or you'd like to listen to it again, or you'd like to refer your friends to it, once again, go to my website, pattysheen.com, and you will find a archived shows page, which is quite easy to get to. And there is a link to every one of the shows that have been broadcast to date. With that, we will get back to Eric. And he had just started talking about the fact that he had made this trip around the world. So take it away, Eric.
So here I am, single, 40-something, in and out of work, you know, over the summertime. And I'm just thinking, Patty, what in the world am I going to do in the fall? The rafting season is going to wrap up. Typically, that was when Christine and I would take vacation because it was the shoulder season. You know, rafting was over. We had all kinds of free time. We would take off. So here's our time of year when we go on vacation. Here's September when Christine's birthday was. Here's October when our anniversary was. Here's November and Thanksgiving. And good golly, what am I going to do in December? What am I going to do for Christmas? And I just, you know, it was just me asking our Lord God, please, 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 can you open something for me to just A, be busy, or B, just get the heck out of here? I will take either one. I will take anything, but just something. So I am not sitting around the house having to just slog through this. And you know what, Patty, it was 2, maybe 3 weeks later, a friend of mine called, lots of friends calling at that point, but this one called. She worked for United Airlines. She had lost her husband a couple years before me and Christine and a lot of friends had really gathered around her during that time. So she called me now and she said, hey, you know, are you eating? Yeah, I'm eating. Okay, taking care of yourself? Yeah, I'm taking care of myself. And then she asked, hey, here's a question. I have my employee travel benefit with United that, you know, you usually share that with your spouse, but she no longer had her spouse. Would I be interested in it? And of course, stupidville, I'm like, maybe. I don't know. right? So long and short, yeah, I engaged with this opportunity and I took full advantage of it. And I said, absolutely, I'm going to gear up and I'm basically going to leave and I'm going to go somewhere else for the next couple of months. And somewhere else, the immediate somewhere else ended up being Croatia. So, you're thinking about. Right. When you're thinking about going somewhere, there's a lot of places to go. But for me, I saw a photo in a travel book, and it was a photo of some waterfalls. And they're about 3 hours from Zagreb, Croatia. And I said, I'm going to go there. I don't know what it was, but it was just, I'm going to go see those waterfalls. And so I flew out, and no kidding, I dropped into northern Italy. And, of course, I took the trains around. Well, if you take trains around the Adriatic Sea, you can't help but run into Venice. So I stayed in Venice for a couple of days, and Venice is just as magical as you think it is. Okay, at night, even more so. So I got to hang out in Venice. I went through the country of Slovenia. Little did I know, Slovenia is like the Colorado of Eastern Europe, and it was beautiful.
Really?
I went to these... Oh, yeah. Went to these just turquoise lakes and rivers and just played around in Slovenia for 2 weeks. And eventually I made my way around to Croatia and the waterfalls. There's probably a picture of those on the slideshow going by. But it just spurred in me, this is a good thing. And from there, I flew back across the U.S., went out into the Pacific. I stopped in Hawaii. I stopped in Guam. I went up into, you know, Tokyo, Japan. I went to Hong Kong. It was really, really interesting. I've got a note that I journaled to myself at one point, and it was basically when I had been in Tokyo for a week, and it was interesting. You know, you go to Tokyo, and you're totally overwhelmed. You have no idea what you're doing. Different culture, radically different culture. This is not Europe anymore. And, of course, I don't speak the language, so you are absolutely completely lost. But over a week's time, I kind of got my feet under me to where I started to feel more comfortable. And that's when something very interesting happened. About the time I started feeling comfortable, I decided to leave. I don't know exactly, you know, why I'm coming up with that. And I journaled it to myself, and it just, I just said something very interesting, like, every time I start to feel comfortable someplace, I turn around and leave it. Just an interesting little journal entry. Come to find out later in this surviving survival book, which I actually ran into in the Customs House Library in Sydney, Australia. I actually saw it in a little library there. I start reading through. This guy says, oh, by the way, if you're going to travel, travel is one of the time-honored traditions to help grief do its work. Oh, by the way, if you really want to up the power of travel to do that, he said, the very best thing you can do is go feel lost somewhere. And if you start to feel comfortable, he said, go somewhere else and feel lost again, because that is the single best way. Right? And I'm like, Lord God, is that what you were doing this whole time? Because honestly, I was really nervous because I had a lot of people who were behind me going out and traveling. You know, they're watching the house for me. They're getting the mail for me. They're like, go, go, go. But then I had some people who were like, I don't think this is a good thing. I think you're running away. I think you need to stay here and basically sit, stare at the walls and bawl your head off, and that's how you should get through it. These were well-meaning individuals, but they were basically referring to me over and over again that you're running away from what you should be dealing with, and you know what? When you come back, it's going to be here. Oh, Patty, I was so nervous because it really felt like I was working things out on this trip. And then I thought, man, I'm going to come back. I'm going to have to pick all this up again. And this is going to be such a terrible thing. And lo and behold, nope. What I was working out was actually everything. When I came back, yeah, you kind of have to reestablish your life at that point. But it was so much easier. The emotion was mostly gone. The oddball crazy stuff was gone. I did have the one-year anniversary. I had the monthly anniversaries for about 4 months, and then they started to kind of go away, or I got busy and I just lost track of it. But either way.
Yeah, that happened to me too, Eric. I know where you're at there. I know where you're coming from. Yeah.
Right. So then I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling pretty good. You know, come October, November, the 23rd of the month comes and goes, and I really don't notice it. And I'm so happy. And I am in Sydney, Australia, in the month of December, and it's like December 5th, and I am walking around one of the cities I have dreamed about visiting all my life, and there's nothing. And I mean, I'm not engaged. I'm just spinning. Nothing is grabbing my attention. I'm not depressed per se, but there was something just wrong. I could not engage with where I was. And I'm trying to figure out what the heck is up. And I'm looking at all these little selfie photos I'm taking of myself, and there's not a one. There's not a one where I'm smiling. I don't feel sad. I don't feel depressed. I just feel, I'm here. Like, what the heck? I'm in Sydney, Australia. I should be like, you know, there should be something here. Well, lo and behold, oh, yeah, it's the one-year anniversary. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. So basically, what I felt on the 23rd, the 21st, 22nd, 23rd, all those months, I'm like, oh, my gosh. So seriously, I'm going to feel like that for an entire month? Well, the answer is yes. Yes, that was my one-year anniversary. It sucked, obviously, it's supposed to, but once again, God opened these most amazing doors. I was talking to somebody in Australia trying to get engaged with something there, and I talked to a girl who did a rental car return service where somebody drives a car one way to Brisbane, and they will basically ask you, go up to Brisbane and drive the car back. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Perfect. This sounds great, so I'm going to do this. Well, this girl, this poor little Australian girl, I call her on the day, like 2 days later. I call her, oh my gosh, she is so apologetic. I'm so sorry. Your vehicle's not there. Something happened. It's, you know, I had this gig for you and it's not there. And I'm like, well, you know, that's okay. Not the end of the world. You know, do you have anything else? Please, please, please give me something to do. And she's like, I got nothing. But she said, if you are back in the U.S. anytime soon, she's like, my coworker across the cube wall here, she handles the same thing in the U.S., and she has got a million things she needs done. I'm like, what do you mean? She's like, she said she's got 7 RVs in L.A. that need to be in Orlando.
Oh,
okay,
my goodness.
How does that work? Right? And she's like, well, basically, they rent it to you for $1 a day, so that, you know, you're covered under insurance and everything. And she said, basically, you have 10 days to drive, you know, 3,000 miles. You have a fuel allowance that they give you. You have, you know, you can't drive, you know, to Orlando via Chicago. But yeah, you know, you've kind of got some mileage there. And that's all you do is drive these vehicles and reload, you know, it's vehicle relocation. I was like, you know what? If I was in LA, could she set me up with that like on Monday? She's like, yeah, we absolutely could. And so I'm traveling standby, but for the record, some people it will never do the 14, 15 hour flight from Sydney to the West Coast of the US. Technically, I've done it 4 times because I jumped on a plane, went back to LA. 24 hours later, she had me in a 25 foot RV. Are you kidding me? And I drove this monstrous thing across. I mean, you couldn't get any easier. I didn't even need a map. It was like basically get out of LA, get on I-10, and Highway 10 goes across the southern U.S. straight as an arrow and basically yep. takes you right into Orlando. I'm like, wow. I don't even have to navigate. It was like, Lord God, this is exactly what I needed. Driving mm-hmm. some big honking, you know, RV across the U.S., and I tell you what, you know, I laid out on the roof in White Sands, you know, National Monument, and watched shooting stars. And I visited some friends in Dallas, and I pulled over in New Orleans just to have lunch, you know. You know, I just did these silly little things along the way, and it was marvelous. It was absolutely marvelous.
That is awesome, Eric. That sounds like the ideal job.
I don't know about the ideal job, but I tell you what, if you got to do your 1 year anniversary and your head is just not in it, I tell you what, there's worse things to do than drive across the U.S. Here's the other thing, if you will. I was completely jet lagged. I mean, completely. And so here I am driving this vehicle that all I have to do is pull over into a rest stop and I can like crawl in a bunk and sleep, right? And so here I am, Patty. This is the most ridiculous thing. Okay, so it's December in the Northern Hemisphere, remember. I'm a little out of it, so to speak. So I'm driving along, and, you know, what I do is basically I would just stay on Australia time. So I would, you know, I'd drive till like, you know, 4 or 5 in the morning, and then about that time my body kind of would transition over, and I'd go to sleep, and I'd sleep till like noon and then get up and keep driving again. But at one point in the middle of Texas, I got up like around noonish, and, you know, I start driving, and no kidding, like three hours later, something is up, and I can't quite figure it out. Is it like a wildfire? Because the sky is real hazy and kind of getting colorful, and it was like, man, is there like a wildfire or something going on? I don't get it. All of a sudden, I recognize it's 4 p.m. The sun is setting behind me. I'm looking at the sunset in the eastern sky. Are you kidding me? I'd only been up like 3 hours and the sun was already setting. Just this kind of stuff. This is what I was doing on my 1 year anniversary. And it was like, it was ridiculous, but it was exactly precisely what the doctor ordered. It was absolutely perfect. That was my 1 year anniversary. Yeah.
I've been attending a hospice support grief group here in town. That's one of the things they emphasize in is to have a plan for those trigger days. You know,
beautiful.
For you, it's the 23rd, and of course the whole Christmas season, I'm sure, has got to be absolutely devastating for you. But the Christmas season is tough usually for anyone who has lost a loved one. And yeah, we talk quite extensively about, you know, have a plan in mind.
Right. You know, and this is what's so fun. I run into people who do grief support groups. I'm not a grief support group guy. I just don't think it would have worked for me. Going out and,
for some people it doesn't,
you know,
Eric, you're right.
Right. Everyone does grief differently. If we know anything, that's what we know. And for me, running around in the jungles of Guam, right, that was my thing. That's what I did, and that's what did it. But it's interesting how the more I hear all these little tips and tricks from support groups, the more I see God incorporating those into my life at the time without me even having a clue. Like, just like you said, yes, having something really having something really that you can busy yourself with on those trigger days, on those anniversaries. I didn't have anything going on. I was in Sydney, Australia. Isn't that enough? No.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
It wasn't. It was awful. And so now, yeah, I get it. I get it. You know, like around Christmas time, oh, yeah, it's kind of a double whammy for me. So I am very, very intentional about what I do around Christmas time. So I so appreciate our gracious Heavenly Father just putting that stuff into my life. I had no clue what I was doing. I was traveling, and I figured I was going to come back and just get destroyed. But for now, I'm traveling, and it feels better. And so it was good. It's interesting to connect the dots from there, if you will. I get back. I resume life for what it is, right? We're not, as they probably told you in the support group, we're not going to get past this. You know, we're going to get through it, okay? But
right.
We're never going to get over it. It's going to be there, and it's going to be there in some way, shape, or form the rest of your life. So don't try and get past it. Just get through it. Get on with whatever life is going to look like in the new stage of life. For me, somebody had told me, hey, when you come back, what an amazing journey, right? I was coming off of 3 months in New Zealand at the very end. And they're like, hey, you should come back. Come to my outdoor retail store. And he said, you should give a slide talk. Oh, you know, he's like, just throw a bunch of pictures up there and talk about what you did. I'm like, you know, that would actually be kind of fun, you know? And okay. So in my mind, I had in mind I would give a presentation at the end of my trip. I took some photos, kind of, you know, taking photos of signs and stuff, things that you do just to get your mind around. Yeah, if I wanted to share this with somebody else. Well, what's so interesting is I called a guy up. Oh, he's busy. Sorry. I filled my room with a bunch of overstock. I can't have you. Well, I had this idea, right? So I had this idea for this slide talk in mind. Nothing was going to happen with it. So I asked some guys through a hiking group here locally through one of the churches, and they were like, we would love to have you do that. So I did it. I had like 40-some people in a room together. I showed them a bunch of really pretty pictures. But for the most part, yeah, I kind of talked through a lot of what was going on. It was really good, you know. People really appreciated it. And one of the gals said, you got to write a book about this. Well, I hear you, but this is going to be the most boring book ever. There, you know, I really, at this point, I really didn't see like a journey to, I came back and I felt one again. I really, no, I went for a trip and then I came back. That was it. You know, there wasn't this, you know, life-changing realization or moment on it. You know, I just kind of felt better as I traveled. Well, she's like, you got to write a book. So I came up with, she's like, you should do more coffee table book, like lots and lots of photos and just a little bit of text. I'm like, you know, I can do that. So I did it. She then tells me, you got to go to a writer's conference. You got to show that book to somebody. Because I actually went online, Patty, and I found one of these little do-it-yourself self-pub guys, and I went through and did the layout, and I had them print it out and sell it to me. And it arrived in the mail, and it really looks legit. It looks pretty. And so she's like, go to this writer's conference in May up in Estes Park, go up there and see if somebody will, you know, would like to publish it. So I did. Well, I had plenty of people say, this book is amazing. Wow. It's so beautiful. And I got to share my story with so many people. But in the end, there was an agent from the East Coast who loved the book, loved it. But she said, I'll be honest with you. She said, these books are so pricey to publish. She said, no one's ever going to want to publish it. She's like, I'm really sorry. But she said, it's absolutely amazing. Right. So it was like, well, okay, that's kind of cool. So, you know, I didn't get anything out of that conference, but you know what I did do? I helped out the conference organizers just because I live in Colorado and they're all from Philadelphia. I helped the conference organizers with some stuff. Well, at the end of the conference, they were like, that was so helpful, you doing that. Would you like to come back next year and we'll give you like a staff position? You can just help us again. Sure. So I come back the next year. The next year, I'm selling some devotionals that I'd written up. Once again, found somebody, loved them, loved them, loved them. Oh, yeah, we got a project we're doing with this. That's great. Awesome. Never heard anything back. Okay, no problem. Because what did happen is I had a roommate at last year's conference. His name is Dick Brousseau. He's a branding specialist out of Denver with the National Speaker Association. And he told me, I love your book. I love your story. You've got to share it. You need to be a speaker. really? He said, yes, we're going to make you a speaker. That's just how it's going to be. Okay. We sat down in September of last year. I sat down with Dick and we got a brand, Adventure Experience, Living a Life that's challenging, exhilarating, and eye-opening. In October, I got a logo through someone he referred me to. In November, I got business cards. In December, I put together a website. In late January of this year, that website actually went live. That was adventureexperience.net. And February, I went out and did some marketing promotions for doing speaking, and I pulled the trigger on those 1st of March, and yes, starting end of March into April, May, and up till now, I've been doing speaking up and down the Front Range on basically getting outside your comfort zone and how it makes you a better person.
Wow, good for you, Eric. That is an awesome story. Do you charge a fee for your speaking?
I do, but, you know, I also do a lot of talks for just good, nice organizations, which I am happy. Hey, if we're doing a talk for the library, it's a freebie. Come on. And if mm-hmm. we're doing a talk for, you know, local civic organizations, I am more than happy with an honorarium. Don't worry. I love my talk. I love giving it. I think it's very practical and helpful to people. So for me, it's just as much about me coming and sharing this information with you as it is, you know, pay me enough to keep the lights on. I'm not too worried about that, right?
Exactly. If you would, Eric, tell us, what do you think of all the experience that you have had? You said that you had a hair-raising story or two. Would you share with us one of the most extraordinary experiences that you have had?
I have had some extraordinaries, right? You know, hiking around waterfalls in Eastern Europe and going to, you know, hidden beaches in Guam that are right next to, like, live fire zones. So you got to keep your head down so that, you know, stray bullets don't hit you.
Mm-hmm.
I hiked Mount Doom. Think of the Lord of the Rings series, that big, perfect-looking volcano that they used for that Peter Jackson used for Mount Doom in the Lord of the Rings series. I actually hiked that. It's Mount Narrahoe.
Wow.
It's right there in the Tongariro Crossing, North Island, New Zealand. I hiked it. I stood on top of it. It's a live volcano. Granted,
mm-hmm.
I didn't throw a ring into it, but it's a live volcano, and you can hike it. And I'm like, I'm going to hike that.
Wow.
The hair raising just goes, yeah, you know, I have done the world's highest commercially rafted waterfall, 21 feet. It's done the world's highest bungee jump. It's like 300-foot free fall, another 400 feet of run out. Just over and over again, just doing these high adrenaline experiences. And I think what that goes to is it really informs me on the power of adventure to, yeah, it's going to be challenging and it's going to be fun and exhilarating, but it can be so eye-opening, Patty. You've got people going out over and over again assured that they're going to hate the experience or they're going to be terrible at it. And then lo and behold, they have fun and they're great at it. And all of a sudden their eyes are kind of opened to, you know, all my life I've stayed away from these types of activities. And now suddenly I realize I'm good at them. Oh my gosh. It can be life-changing for some people. And, you know, a lot of people think, well, you're talking about whitewater rafting. No, I'm talking about someone asks you to step up and take a leadership position in your organization. It could be your MOPS group at Chick-fil-A. It could be your book club. It could be at work. Someone wants you to run a project team, and you've always said, I'm not a leader. And
mm-hmm.
then you get outside your comfort zone, and you take a risk. You take the lead, you raise a hand, you extend a hand, whatever it is you do something not the norm for you, and lo and behold, it's amazing, and you feel alive, and you are working within your strengths and just all the amazingness that comes from that. That's pretty much what I'm talking about these days, Patty. Getting outside your comfort zone, right, and going out, taking risks, facing those challenges, and really feeling alive, and this is what my experience has informed me, you know, of all these years, watching people taking risks, in my case, it was on, you know, in whitewater rafting, but seeing people come back from those experiences wide-eyed, smiling, giggling, so, yeah, just so taken with the idea that they are so much more than they thought they were before that experience.
Yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying, Eric. And I, you know, when you talk about adventure, I know you've talked about the whitewater rafting a lot, but you know what the real adventure is for me is anything that has to do with height. I love to be up high and looking down. I know what you mean about accepting challenges in your daily life.
Yeah.
And that's where we, in fact, didn't you ask us, I can't remember who the other lady was, but we were talking at in one of the lounges at the conference. And I think the question you asked was, what have you done that has taken you the most out of your comfort zone or something like that? And that kind of precipitated a discussion that we should all have, really.
I love that question. When's the last time you stepped out of your comfort zone? It's Patty, this culture we live in, it's wonderful, it's marvelous, but it is a little preoccupied with comfort and safety. Nothing wrong with comfort, nothing wrong with safety, until they get a little bit too central in our lives and they become the expectation and they become something that 2 years later, I still haven't gotten outside my comfort zone because it's comfy. Hello, why would I leave it? But that's the problem. Right. Life happens. The soft things don't make us better people. Right. Hard things make us better people. Those risks, those challenges, getting over losing your spouse, taking advantage of those opportunities to push yourself. We are made for risk. We are all better when facing challenges. You got to step outside your comfort zone to do that, though. And that gets harder and harder each and every day here in America.
Absolutely.
That is the whole point of the talk, so that hopefully people will get outside their comfort zones. They will just, and it doesn't have to be big risks. You know, you can change, if you've used the same coffee creamer for 15 years, change that up. Little risks make the next one a little bit easier. And the next thing you know, they're taking bigger risks. And that's when life starts to change. It starts to get a little more exciting. The adventure experience, if you will, starts to come into your everyday life. And now suddenly there's excitement, there's perspective. Life really is just a little more interesting, but you got to get outside your comfort zone to make it happen.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there, Eric. We're about coming to the end of our time here. Is there anything else you would like to share with listeners before we say goodbye?
I just would encourage your listeners exactly what we're talking about. You know, you've got a bucket list of things you want to do. Don't put them off. Make a plan. You got to be intentional. Make that plan to accomplish those things that you have on your list. And things that come up just spontaneously, maybe do a little more risk-taking. Maybe engage with some of those challenges that you weren't quite prepared for. But you know what? Do it anyway. If you don't have those challenges coming up, hey, getting outside your comfort zone can be real easy. You know, next time you're in a meeting, raise your hand. Share that input that you might have held on to because you're just not sure. Next time you're at a mixer, instead of going over and shaking hands with the person who looks like you, go find the girl with the tattoos and the nose ring and go introduce yourself to her. Step outside your normal experience and see what happens, because I'm going to say it's going to start you on a road that makes you a better person.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Eric. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I do, however, want to make sure that listeners know how to get in touch with you to book a speaking engagement.
Wonderful. Yeah, Patty, if anybody out there knows that, I got a project team, my organization, my civic team, whatever, my library book club. If somebody knows that, we would love to hear a little bit more about this risk-taking and challenge, go out to my website. It's adventureexperience.net. Have a look at the bottom. There's a form where you can give me a little information about yourself. Just let me know where you're at. Hey, worst case scenario, pay some travel expenses, and we'll come up with a fee. And I would love to come out, talk to your organization about facing some challenges, taking some risks, basically living a slightly more dangerous lifestyle than you currently are, and see the difference it makes in your project teams, in your productivity, see the difference it makes at home and in your relationships. It is pretty amazing, but I would love to get in touch with anybody who wants to connect with me. It's adventureexperience.net.
Sounds wonderful, Eric. Thank you so much. And for obviously you came from a very dark time with the loss of your wife, especially at such a young age. And
yeah.
You found your way back to light in a very unique way. And thank you for sharing that with us, Eric. It's been such a pleasure to have you this morning. And God bless you. You have a wonderful day.
Thanks so much, Patty.
To our listeners, in closing, when you look back on the dark periods in your life, you may find they were not quite as dark as they seemed at the time. And when the light does shine again, it is so much brighter than you remembered. I'd like to remind you to check out Eric's website. It is adventureexperience.net, but if you don't remember that, you will find it on my website, which is Patty Sheen, PattiSheene.com. And there under the Block Talk Radio tab, you'll find links to all of our guests' websites and social media outlets. Please join us again next week, Tuesday morning at 8 o'clock Mountain Daylight Time. And remember, the show is also available on archive. God bless you. Have a good week.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a glare.